supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. We're now some 48 hours out from kickoff at the Super Bowl. Let's get game perspective from Daily News columnist Marcus Hayes. Marcus, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Well, Dave, I got to tell you, I wish I was in your studio at NewsWorks Tonight, because when I woke up early this morning, it was 7 degrees below zero, or as my European friends like to tell me, about 22 degrees below zero Celsius.
Then I guess I should boast about a balmy 28-degree day here.
There are lots of envious Philadelphians in Minnesota right now wishing that they were home and just cold, not frozen.
I need to start with a confession, Marcus. When last we spoke, it was just prior to the Eagles' sojourn into the playoffs. They were about to take on Atlanta, and I, for one, wasn't feeling very good about the outcome. And so here we are now. Can the Eagles learn lessons from the two teams who have now built leads only to fall to the Patriots that they can use on Sunday?
Certainly they can, but this Eagles team is a little bit different in that those two teams each had quarterbacks who are probably inferior to Eagles starter Nick Foles, who was Eagles' backup, Nick Foles, until the third quarter of game 13. And that's saying a lot. That's a statement about the state of quarterbacking in the NFL more than anything else. But yeah, the difference is this Eagles team can put, I think, more faith in Nick Foles to keep their foot on the accelerator in the second half and then the fourth quarter than either of the teams that the Patriots faced before.
Clearly, Nick Foles had a quarterback game for the ages 2 weeks back, but is it fair to tie him to that standard? Because before the playoffs, his play was pretty inconsistent.
Well, I got to say, you know, the Patriots are the worst defense the Eagles and Nick Foles will face in the postseason. And they could not have faced a better defense than Minnesota, which had the number one defense in the league. And he destroyed that defense. He played spectacularly well, mainly after the first quarter. It did affect him early. And that's who he is. He's a rhythm quarterback. He needs to get over the excitement and the butterflies and not think about playing quarterback, just play quarterback.
So I'm getting a sense from you that in Foles you trust. Do you have that same confidence with Peterson, the coach?
I have way more confidence in Doug Peterson than I have in Nick Foles, who, you know, each of them I've seen, you know, I've seen all of Doug's coaching career and most of Nick's quarterbacking career. And, you know, there are deficiencies and flaws and limitations to Nick's game. I'm not sure that that's true of Doug Peterson. He, from my perspective, with the exception of Bill Belichick, who's probably the best coach in the history of football, Doug Peterson has had the best season I've ever seen a coach have in any sport, except maybe Larry Brown when he took the Sixers to the final.
I won't put you on the spot, but I believe the line is around 5 points favoring New England. It sounds like you're feeling the Eagles could cover that, if not actually prevail on Sunday.
Yeah, I think my pick, which we're required to submit to the paper so we can be humiliated for posterity, I think my pick is 24-20 Eagles, and it's predicated on really the Eagles' best player, even when Carson Wentz is healthy. He's their most important player. But the best player on the team, the person that it's built around, is Fletcher Cox, their defensive tackle, who is approaching the confidence level of Reggie White when he was here. So, yeah, I believe the Eagles have the personnel and the scheme to attack a Patriots defense that is, again, the worst one that they'll face in the postseason. And what I've seen from the coach and what I've seen from the backup quarterback and now the starter is a real capacity to rise to the moment. And there's no greater moment than this.
Well, safe travels, stay warm, and we're all rooting. Let's see what happens.
Thank you, Dave.
Daily News columnist Marcus Hayes on NewsWorks Tonight. Meanwhile, Over the 10-day lead-up to the game, some 10,000 volunteers are representing Minnesota and the Twin Cities, helping the some 1 million attendees navigate and savor all that the state has to offer. Among them, Laura McCollum, managing editor for Daily News at NPR News. Laura, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
You're welcome.
10,000 volunteers, and I understand you had to make the cut. There were some three times that many who wanted this job.
Exactly. Hard to believe, but 30,000 people applied for an unpaid volunteer position. And you might say, why the heck would anybody do that? For the people I met, it's because they don't have tickets to the Super Bowl, but they want to be part of the fun. You know, Minnesota has not hosted one of these in 26 years, and this was a way to be part of it, even if you can't go to the game.
So what were some of the criteria by which you were chosen?
We had to go through an interview process, and it was a lot of questions like, you know, why would you want to do this? And what do you like about Minnesota? They wanted to make sure that we would be good ambassadors for the state and for the city, and that we'd be welcoming and friendly. Hopefully I impressed them that way.
Apparently so, because you got your wish working indoors.
Yes, that was my first choice. So of these 10,000 folks, quite a few are stationed outside. We have this big thing called Super Bowl Live on Nicollet Mall in downtown Minneapolis, where you could be outside for 4 hours. And so those people have their Super Bowl volunteer parkas and their snow pants. I was at volunteer headquarters where it was very comfortable, even warm.
Laura, at the risk of stereotyping, is that a Minnesotan trait to show up when called upon? I would think there'd be a healthy attrition rate, especially given the temperatures we're hearing about this week in Minnesota.
Well, it is kind of a Minnesota trait. So the woman who's in charge of all the volunteers, this Ellie Kehoe, has done this for previous Super Bowls. And typically, attrition rates are, you know, a quarter of people don't show up for their shifts. She said at the end of the San Francisco one, half of people weren't showing up for their volunteer shifts. Well, more than 95% of volunteers are showing up here. So even though it's cold, we know how to dress for the cold, and people are showing up and wanting to impress everyone, to hoping that people come back if we host it again or you come back and visit.
What are some of your takeaways from this volunteer experience that you perhaps didn't anticipate?
I didn't anticipate how fun it was going to be to get to know the other volunteers. I mean, my main motivation was I thought it would be a creative way to sort of get inside the Super Bowl, you know, kind of embed with the volunteers and see what that experience was like. And they're really great people. A lot of them work for corporate America, and they thought this would be a nice change of pace from working for 3M or United Health or Cargill or Target or whatever company. And it's just been really fun getting to know them.
Laura, thanks so much for volunteering your time with us on NewsWorks Tonight.
You're welcome.
Laura McCollum, managing editor for Daily News at NPR News. Now, for those who aren't into sports, it can be tough to understand the frenzied enthusiasm of Eagles fans, and that's where our next story comes in. As the birds close in on the Super Bowl, WHYY's Avi Wolfman Aaron found that this moment has become a lot bigger than football for a lot of people. It's become a way to reconnect with family and honor those who did not live to see this year's big game.
When Matt Stamen scored tickets to the NFC Championship in Philadelphia, he wanted to take his grandfather, and so on his way to the game, he grabbed a little funeral card propped against the family television.
He kept it in my pocket the entire time, and it felt like he was there with me.
Stamen's grandfather, Bill Santangelo, died 18 months ago. Santangelo's parents had abandoned him during the Great Depression. He bounced through foster homes, and in the Eagles, he found a lifelong distraction.
It kind of seemed like that was his one escape from reality.
He passed that escape down to his grandsons. For more than half a century, the Eagles have been a family passion and a way to mark the passage of time.
It's something that comes back every year. You know, every September, every August, there's the Eagles. You know how they are to this town. It's a part of life.
The team last won a championship in 1960, before it was even called the Super Bowl. That's 58 years of births and deaths, now wrapped up in this potentially triumphant moment.
They're bigger than just the 3 hours of the sporting events.
Stan Stevenson's family has owned season tickets dating back to the 1960s. He and his 79-year-old dad still go to games.
He would tell me all the old stories about Tommy McDonald, who was his absolute favorite, and Chuck Bednarik.
On Sunday, he'll be savoring time with his pops and thinking about his grandma, a passionate fan who died years back. And if the Eagles win...
I think I'll cry a little bit. I really do.
Matt Stamen thinks he'll shed a tear, too.
It sounds stupid, but when you really think about it, it's not. You know, it's an extension of your family. It's more than just a game.
On Sunday, a lot of people will stop and watch a football game. For themselves, but also for the people who can't watch it with them. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
Super Bowl 52 has been framed as a David versus Goliath battle of biblical proportions. Religious congregations across the region have also embraced the Eagles' underdog status. But can you actually pray for victory? WHYY's Lindsay Lazarski looked to the area's spiritual leaders who are also fans for their thoughts before Sunday's game.
If you read the signs around town, "From whence we came, in foals we trust," and "Philly believes in you, St. Nick," Eagles fans across the region have put their faith in this team to bring home a Super Bowl championship. After crushing the Minnesota Vikings last week, Eagles quarterback Nick Foles showed his gratitude in a post-game interview.
"All glory belongs to God. In this moment, it's unbelievable. It's humbling."
On the field, the Philadelphia Eagles have deep roots in thanking a higher power for their athletic feats. But off the field, for the fans, is it okay to appeal to a higher power for a win on Sunday? And will their prayers be answered?
"Thank you, Jesus. Yeah."
At the Greater Exodus Baptist Church on North Broad, you can barely hear the rumble of the subway underneath the calls from Pastor Herb Lusk.
"Somebody say Holy Ghost. Somebody say Holy Ghost."
Lusk is a former Eagles running back, and in 1977, he made NFL history.
"It was the old Meadowlands Stadium, yes. That was probably the cherry on my career."
In the second half, he caught a pass from then-quarterback Ron Jaworski and ran for 70 yards.
"It was a sweep around the left side, and I just saw some daylight because of some good blockers in front of me, and took that daylight and ran to the promised land."
When he reached the end zone, he dropped to his knees and became the first NFL player to pray after scoring a touchdown. Today, Lusk is head chaplain for the Eagles and leads the players and the coaches in Bible study and chapel services. He says, of course Eagles fans will be praying for their team, but so will the Patriots fans. The difference is how hard the teams have prepared and what they're willing to sacrifice.
"Listen, we're not just simply talking about divine intervention here, which is the most important thing, but this team has a ton of talent. These boys can play."
As a former player, Lusk says he has a sense for what the players may be feeling, and he's tasked with delivering a message to the team before game day. He's waiting for the right moment to conjure his message in Minnesota, but offered this nugget.
"If the Eagles will just simply start where they are, use what they have, and do what they can, victory is coming."
In Delaware County, Sister Virginia Pascal is a diehard Eagles fan. She's been giving analysis and making predictions on Channel 6 since the postseason.
"All you skeptics that think we're going to be one and out in the playoffs, there's a saying in Philly. Hit it, sisters. You gotta believe."
Sister Virginia never bets against the power of prayer.
"I just put a couple dollars in the box and lit a candle and just said, take us all the way."
On Sunday, she'll be at the Immaculate Heart of Mary Sisters Retreat, praying and cheering for an Eagles win. Her prediction? Eagles 27, Patriots 24.
"If it were to God, and if God really did make choices, he would obviously choose the Eagles."
Father James Martin is a theologian and author. Having grown up in Plymouth Meeting, he says Philadelphia sports dominated the soundtrack of his youth. To Martin, it's completely appropriate and forgivable to pray for that perfect spiral pass and touchdown.
"Philly fans should feel free to pray to God. Whether or not God's going to answer or God cares about the outcome of sports games, I'm not sure. But yeah, absolutely, go ahead, go for it, pray. Pray your heart out."
He says being an Eagles fan means being connected to a larger community, and that's part of religion.
In the words of the great saints, I would say, fly, Eagles, fly.
Lindsay Lazarski, WHYY News.
The betting line may tilt toward the Patriots, but in the court of public appeal, it's fly, Eagles, fly. Let's spread our wings with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, so Viking fans accepted. It's root, root, root for the underdog?
That's right. Our good friends over at Monmouth University just conducted a poll where they ask Americans all across the country who they will be rooting for, the Eagles or the Patriots. And interestingly, a lot of people didn't have an opinion. About 46% said that they didn't care who won the Super Bowl, but of those who did, it was Eagles over 2-1. 37% of Americans, based on this Monmouth poll, said they would be rooting for the Eagles, and just 16% for the Patriots. So underdogs are not. The average American is tilting towards the birds as opposed to the Patriots.
Interestingly, they also asked who respondents will be rooting against.
And it's almost a mirror image there. 39% in this Monmouth poll said they would be rooting against the Patriots, and only 12% against the Eagles. Could be the Yankee syndrome. A lot of people have talked about that. The Patriots have won so much, like the Yankees used to in baseball, that people say, yeah, they're a dynasty. We don't like them. Maybe some other factors involved with the antipathy towards the Patriots, based on allegations of this, that, and the other over the years. Or, and I think this is probably likely, Dave, people just love the Eagles. How's that around the country?
I like that, but I'm particularly intrigued by the 2% of respondents who will be rooting against both teams. Presumably those are those aforementioned Vikings fans.
Vikings fans or Titans fans or Jaguars fans or others who got beat in the playoffs probably say a pox on both your houses.
Frank, we are 3 days out from President Donald Trump's State of the Union address. In the context of his approval rating that rarely reaches 40%, to what extent did his priorities line up with those of the public at large?
Well, some did and some didn't. Let me give you a couple of examples where what he said did resonate with underlying public opinion. One of those is infrastructure. We've talked about that a lot here, Dave. We've tested that in different ways. Other polls have tested infrastructure. We've even used the T word. We said, would you approve or disapprove of spending $1 trillion, that's the T word, dollars, on infrastructure? Overwhelming approval, like 76% say yes. Now, of course, the complexity of Trump's calling for spending more on infrastructure, I think he said $1.5 trillion in his speech, depends on how you pay for it. And he and Republicans have come up with some complex way of paying for it. But the idea, the concept of spending more money to fix America's infrastructure is one that resonates extremely highly with the average American.
Presumably more complex than merely raising taxes.
That's right. I think there's discussion of states paying some amount of money, and then the federal government paying some amount of money, and then businesses having to do their thing and so forth. It gets very complicated. But again, when we ask the public just straightforwardly, spend $1 trillion, and other questions, is that federal money? The public says yes. So the straightforward idea of spending more tax money on infrastructure is one that resonates positively with the average American.
Other areas of accord?
Well, national security, Americans generally seem to be in sync with what Trump's doing on that regard. In fact, satisfaction overall with national security has been one of the things that's jumped the most over the last year. And of course, the president extolled the positive indicators from our economy and all of our measures, including our measure of consumer confidence. The question we ask, is now a great time to find a quality job? Other questions like that show that Americans are very pleased about the economy.
How about areas where the president staked out a position in opposition to the will of the majority?
Interestingly, tax cut legislation. Americans aren't necessarily opposed to the idea of tax cuts, but they are clearly opposed in all of our data and other data to corporate tax cuts, which was a big part of the bill. And also, I should add on energy, he talked about how he has helped bring the coal industry back, but Americans very much at this point favor the environment over production of energy. And they also favor alternative sources of energy, money being spent on wind and solar and things like that, rather than traditional sources of energy. So our data suggests that Trump's emphasis on these traditional fossil fuels doesn't fit with what Americans think should be done in terms of energy.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. Assistant news director, Katie Colinari. John Musoni is assistant vice president for news operations. At the controls this week, Al Banks, Charlie Kyer, and Bob Alls. Sandra Clark is vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for listening and have a super weekend. I'm Dave Heller. NewsWorks Tonight.